One. Sanjeev Mohan, welcome to the Data Strategy Show. Sanjeev, it's really great to see you.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much, Samir. I am delighted that I get to talk to you again.
Yeah, likewise. It's been a while. The last time I think we saw each other in the flesh was at Big Data London last year, right?
That is correct.
Was it last year or was it the year
Not
before?
here
It was the
before.
year before. That's right, because I was not at Big Data London last year.
That is
So
correct.
yes. So how are things? How's the world of gallivanting with Sanjeev Mohan? Huh?
So I am a travel junkie.
I know you are. I know
I
you
have never said this on a recorded show, so this is the first time I'm saying, but
are.
now that I have a mission in life,
Yes.
and life, I have to say, is a lot more meaningful now that I work for myself and have a fiduciary responsibility to educate people around me, connect the dots, learn what's going on in the technology space. I don't have the luxury to just get up and travel and see the world because if it interferes with my client deliverables and my work, it's a problem. When I
Yes.
used to work for others, it was not my problem. Now it
Yes,
is.
of course, of course, of course. Okay, on that then, your mission in life, why don't you tell our listeners what is that mission in life and what are you up to these days?
Thank you for asking that. So again, this is a territory I don't really get to talk about. So I'm so happy you asked me because one of the things that I also want to do is I want to be an inspiration for my kids and for young generation, and basically say that it's never too late. You can always follow your passion, do what you want to do in life. My passion, actually, I have two passions. Travel is one of them, which right now is not happening. It's mostly conferences, and
Okay.
the other is data.
Yes.
So, I started my career at Oracle in 1990s. So,
Right.
I've been in this space for decades now, and I love what's happening in the space of data. I'm now independent because I felt that I wanted to be at the cutting edge and explore like new paradigms, new approaches, new ways of using data. And this was about 2.5 years ago when I went independent before the Gen AI
Yes.
barrage had
Yes.
started. So I knew that there was a lot more to be done. So what I'm trying to do is think through what are the problems that businesses have, and then how can technology literally be a servant to business? We are not the masters. We
Yes.
don't do technology projects just for the sake of it. We are the
Correct.
people. Yeah, we may be cool, but we are here to serve a business need. So my goal in life is to understand what do the businesses need? What is broken today? Is there a better way of doing things? And in that process, I help my clients elevate their message and their awareness.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great mission. I would love to speak more about the traveling stuff because of the world map behind you. And obviously, I was expecting there to be dots everywhere you've been.
I'm more sophisticated than that. I'm a pro at travel. That's a novice move when you put,
You're a pro. Okay.
I hope I'm not oversharing, but I have two daughters. Before
Yes.
they went to college, I had taken them to over 100 countries.
Wow.
So
Aren't they extremely lucky?
thank you. This is so we got into trouble. My kids were very little. I had a project international, and I just booked them to go, and I just told their teachers that I'm going to take them out of school. The
Sure.
principal called us into her office and she said, "You can't just take your kids out." And I said, "Travel is the best education we can
Yes.
give kids." And she looks at me, she goes, "Yeah, I agree. Do it when it's holidays."
But
And
you
I had
took
to
them out
cancel.
anyway.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you
I
didn't? Ah,
was taking
okay.
them out. And I thought a little, what difference
yes.
does it make?
Yeah, it doesn't make much difference, does it?
Yeah, but it did.
I agree with you on that one. I think, you know, generally when they're small, you can take them out. Anyway, let's get to what you're doing now in terms of the non-traveling piece, but the data piece. So you talked about really understanding the trends and understanding what the business factors are of the, you know, of your clients and applying, you know, data and technology to that.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, those things are not the be all and end all, but really what are the current challenges that you're seeing in a lot of businesses? Because you're, you know, hot footing everywhere across the globe. So are there specific commonalities between businesses across the globe, or are there specific areas where you see distinctions between different countries, you know, different outcomes, etc.?
I wouldn't say I see differences across countries.
Mm.
I we have a since your program is called Data Strategy Show,
mm.
we have
mm.
a fundamental problem with the way data ecosystem has developed.
Yes.
What I mean is I used to be a programmer on the data side, SQL, PL SQL. We didn't follow any software engineering discipline.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have tools. We didn't have the right education. So we literally just wrote pages and pages of code, and we just put it into production and then crossed our fingers, hoped everything would work.
Mm-hmm.
Software engineering, on the other hand, a long time ago became much more modular with like the whole DevOps, CI,
yeah.
CI, you know, agile
mm-hmm.
way of doing. So that religion came to us very late. So the common problems that I see have to do with the businesses wait way too long for the data teams to come around. And data teams, on the other hand, are overwhelmed just trying to fix, to meet all the demands. So businesses want information from all the data sources, not just structured, which is what I did almost all my life. Now with Gen AI, we are also looking at unstructured data. So businesses want, they're challenged, because some data is in structured, but 80% of data is in unstructured. But we had no way of classifying that data and extracting entities and knowledge from that until
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
The data comes, it's slow moving and it's batch, it's like nightly batch jobs. But some data, like if I want to track how's my campaign doing right now, at this moment, I need that streaming data.
Of course you do.
Right, but then I want to compare it with, well, how did I do last year when I ran the campaign? That's historical data. So what ended up happening was we got into these silos.
Mm-hmm.
So my big passion right now is how do you break these silos, and how do you deliver a cost-effective architecture? There are many ways of skinning the cat, as I
yeah,
said.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point, because often, you know, breaking the silos is what every data team speaks about. Every company speaks about. Some silos are actually pretty good. They were formed for a reason. But from a data perspective, how do you think we should be organizing, and how do you think that the team should be more efficient to break down those silos, and what do they need to really think about in terms of that progression?
So great point. So I'll be very tactical, because that's what I like to see. Samir, going back to some of the philosophies that I brought to bear when I went independent, is that some people are really good at technology and they're very bottoms up, but then they miss the big picture. And then a lot of management consultants, on the other hand, are very good for top down, but then they don't have the depth to connect the dots. So I try to bring these both top down and bottoms up together. So I'll be very tactical. When it comes to silos, and you asked me, are there differences between countries? It turns out that there are differences in organizations. Banks, by design, are siloed because there's a conflict of interest between a private bank, an investment bank, a retail bank, a business bank. So, but then some don't need to be in a silo. Like in retail, there's no, like, I want my retail site to understand my preferences based on my historical purchases and then recommend me something. So how do you get over this silo, and what should your data strategy be? So the first thing is we have to recognize our data is across all over. Some data is on premises, some is in the cloud, some data is on the edge, and then some, like retail, a lot of retailers has mainframes and some are cloud. So first of all, one of the very important goals is to minimize movement of data. Let data be where it is, because if we start moving data around, the overhead of latency, risk, compliance, performance becomes very high.
Yeah, agreed.
ETL, ELT things all over the place. So that's at the lowest layer, which is the location of the storage, which is hybrid on-premises. Then when you move a layer higher, this is where things get very interesting, because it used to be that they were all proprietary systems. Now we don't want them to be proprietary. We want them to be open standards. And so Apache Iceberg, Delta, Hoodie. So now we are abstracting this morass of structured and unstructured data through this a unified layer. And then on top of that, so you got storage, you've got a data plane, then you've got a metadata plane. And in metadata plane, you're basically trying to use the metadata that you're collecting. The metadata is technical, business, operational, and then comes the disaggregation of compute. And in disaggregation of compute, you bring the analytical engine of your choice. So my department may be a hotshot at SQL, but your department may be experts at using pandas, and they want to use PySpark or Ray. And then another team may say, we want to experiment with conversational natural language pieces. There are new analytical accelerators. We hear about Presto, Trino, Dremio, Velox. So the idea is, how do I not get locked into a single one-size-fits-all solution?
Mm-hmm.
I have pieces built on open standards, abstracting where the data is stored. And then on top, I've got an API layer, I've got an SDK, because I may have a tabular report. You know, one of my big passions is also data products.
Yes.
But I may create an AI agent that sits on an LLM.
Yeah.
You see, so this is the puzzle that I'm trying to promote, like to help people get better at.
So it's interesting, because the puzzle you have talked about has become so complicated now.
Yes.
You know, we've only 4 or 5 years ago we started talking about the modern data platform. Maybe it was longer than that, but you know, and then all of these different beasts of frameworks came in, or organizational adjustments like the mesh, and now, you know, we're talking about fabric, and then we've got on top of that all of the various things around, you know, data products. As you said, that's a big conversation in the data industry, continuously talking about it. And obviously it was akin to the whole data mesh piece, which came out probably what, 3-4 years ago now. But where are we on that continuum? Because you know, that puzzle is becoming so complicated with the introduction of LLMs. It's almost like somebody needs to really say, hey guys, just stop. You know, we've bombarded all of these organizations with so many things, from the data warehouse to the lake house, now to, you know, mesh and fabric and products. Surely companies must be really sort of sinking in some way, you know, to really understand what their proposition and their value should be in terms of, you know, a platform strategy, or, you know, how they migrate into this new world of thinking with LLMs.
So, Samir, great question. The point I want to make is on what the so-called modern data stack, MDS. In December of last year, 2023, mm-hmm. I wrote a data and AI 2024 trends document, which I posted on my Medium blog site, along with a visionary friend of mine. His name is Rajesh Parekh. We basically propose this idea that we call an intelligent data platform. So it's a data platform that we have today, but with LLMs intelligence infused into it. Mm-hmm. And we all said that this is the rising standard, but a declining standard is called modern data stack. Modern data stack has grown to be explode out of its seams.
Unwieldy is the word I think you're looking for, Sanjeev.
Thousands of products. When Matt Turk does his mad landscape, you literally now need a magnifying glass to see who all are on this thing. I'm very curious, what is he going to do in 2024? Because I declared this trend to be declining in January. One of the most well-known people, founder of DBT Labs, Tristan Handy, wrote a blog in January. And in that he wrote, modern data stack is not going anywhere. It is here to stay and thrive. This was in January. In February, he wrote, it's dead. Or the term is dead. And okay. Then Ken Stancil jumped on it. Joe Rice jumped on it. So all these people were like, yes, you're right, modern. So I'd already said that in December. And then in February, the whole world converged and said, yes. So what is the problem? First of all, we have micro-segmentation of categories. Mm-hmm. So there is a category called ETL. No, now there's ELT, but now there's reverse ELT. Then there's orchestration. Then there is this. And in each of these micro-segmentation, you've got a dozen or
yes.
so.
You
know, in data catalog, we used to track 70 data catalogs. And, you know, by the way, if you talk to any small data catalog vendor, everybody will tell you the same thing. We are best because we are nimble, we are fast and agile, fast onboarding, and within minutes and days, we can give you results as opposed to the large ones. So that's not differentiating enough. So that is a problem. And the other big problem that no one talks about is that there are no common metadata standards. We have not been able to crack that dilemma. So what happens? You've got all kinds of connectors. Every product I look at says, oh, I have 80 connectors, I have 800 connectors. So now imagine the scenario, you have a CFO, he or she comes to work, looks at the dashboard and says, these numbers look wonky. Something went wrong.
Yeah.
But whose fault is it? How do you know whose fault it is? Because because there's no single point of contact, it's a dashboard. So you go to the Looker person. The Looker person says, well, I don't know. I just get these feeds from Fivetran. You ask Fivetran. Fivetran says, well, everything's hunky-dory on my side. Talk to the DBT team. DBT team says, no, talk to SAP team or Teradata or Snowflake. Or, you know, so
the vicious circle continues then. You know, right. And everybody's finger pointing. Yeah.
This is a reason why data mesh is a fantastic idea. The only problem with data mesh is that because we don't have a prescribed way to do it, so people just data mesh wash everything. But the idea of giving the responsibility and ownership to the domains who know the data the best, own it, is a fantastic idea. And then on top, you use product management best practices, and you have a data product owner, who's responsible for creating the report or the dashboard or the machine learning model, really helps alleviate some of these challenges that we talk about.
So let me. I've ne- and one thing I heard you say. I've never heard that term, data mesh wash. That's a term I've never. So you're telling me that everybody's data meshing washing their current stacks. Okay, just a little bit like greenwashing and so on. So everybody says they're doing it, but they're not doing it at all. The second thing is with data mesh and data products and so on. How far are we actually from really, you know, I often see these conversations on LinkedIn, you know, yes. Oh, what is a data product? Why do we need to, you know, we define everything ad nauseum, unfortunately, in the whole data industry. So why can't we, you know, it's a bit back to your metadata standards, I guess, but why don't we just say, look, you know, data products, whatever it is that company thinks it is, you know, and you might have a, And here's where I just want to ask you one thing. You talk about the data product owner, but actually, shouldn't there also be a product owner in the domain, or is the data product owner in the domain itself, or is that a central kind of beacon that person is doing something?
Okay, so all these questions are fantastic. Mm. First of all, where should the data product owner sit, in the domain or in the central team? The answer is actually quite simple. It should be in the domain because
yes,
but I it's nuanced, and I deeper into the reality versus theory. In theory, it should be. Why do I say this? I'm a data engineer by profession. If I get a extract, and I work for a pharma company. Somebody says, okay, I want you to enrich this data and the missing values and, you know, fix all this and then transform this data into this format. I'm like, okay, no problem. I'm an engineer. You know, we can throw technology at anything. But inside that file, I've got ICD code, disease codes. I've got, you know, clinical trial details. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of that because I'm not a domain expert.
Correct.
So literally, you know, applying my, you know, Python skills to just do that. But I don't really have a grasp of why am I doing this stuff? So that's why in theory it should belong in domain because they know, like, how do I know what code is actually sensitive data when I don't even know the meaning of that code? Like if I'm in financial services, I've had this experience in the past where the interest rate could mean five different interest rates. Is it committed? Is it verbal? Yeah. Is it lockdown? Is it the final? Is it anyway? But the point is that data engineers don't understand the domain. The domain people should have the ultimate ownership or accountability of what happens to their data. In reality, what happens is something very interesting. The domains go, wait, what is data mesh? You mean I have to do the work, me? Well, all this time, you just throw it over the wall to Samir. Why is he not doing this? I'm not an expert in IT and data and software version control.
Correct.
So I don't know this stuff. I'm sorry, this is not my forte. I just want to do my R&D stuff or whatever. So this is the reason why we sometimes have to have a central team be the sort of the support, the hand-holding of this domain that is not yet ready to take on this idea of data mesh, data product. But over a period of time, you hope that the central team will withdraw and the business team will see the value, because the faster they can get to results, the faster they want to jump in. But they have to see.
Yeah, of course. And I think that, you know, we've seen this pendulum swing, you know, a lot from centralized, decentralized, federated, back to centralization. And I'm sure we'll keep seeing it because, you know, as business pressures get more and more, as the volatility in markets and the complexity of business and, you know, the uncertainty of certain economies, plays a big, big, well, it's not plays, it has a big impact on businesses. We will see people focusing more on the things that they need to do in terms of business, you know, redefining or creating new business models. And they will have very little time to do this kind of, you know, data mesh activity. Unfortunately, of course, they still need data. They still need data to give them answers to, you know, help them steer the way in the market, you know, understand who are the people that they need should need to be selling to or working with, etc. So this pendulum swing happens too many times. How do we stabilize that? How do we really say, you know, and I don't know if it's called mesh fabric, whatever it is, but how do we start to bring that and temper that and say, look, this is really how we should work from an operating model perspective, from a from a platform perspective? What are some of the trends that you're seeing maybe for some of the future ideas that might be out there?
So great question. I see this pendulum shift all the time. Actually, it's shifted from mainframe days, mainframe to PCs. Yes. To
of course it has.
Yeah, so we're constantly, so it's flash. But we need to stop and say, does it need to be a pendulum? Can we not accept that the realities of life are far more gruesome than how we want it to be? And just accept it for, and how do you accept it? I don't think it'll ever be centralized versus decentralized. It'll always be hybrid. What I mean by hybrid is in data mesh, the idea is decentralization. But if I decentralize too much, and every business domain says, one of the four principles is self-service infrastructure. I'm going to have my own infrastructure. It'll be bloody expensive and a mess to have one team use Redshift, one uses Snowflake, one uses BigQuery, and one uses Cloudera.
Absolute chaos. Yeah.
Yes. And then, so my theory is that in this hybrid world, there are three layers. The infrastructure should be centralized. Even metadata, even data catalog should be centralized. Why I say this is because if somebody says, how many customers do I have? What is the meaning of a customer? How do you count a customer? Is there a revenue limit? Is this like current, past, you know, or even like how many employees do we have?
Yeah.
People know that in a large company because there are different calculations. So business glossary, definition of KPIs, formulas, all the business metadata should be in one place, and the infrastructure should be in one place. The way I say self-service infrastructure, in my mind, it means that the business domains should have very easy API-based or some way to self-service that infrastructure. But and by the way, some people say, what kind of data mesh is this? Everything is on Snowflake. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Okay, that's so centralized infrastructure. A layer above is disaggregated compute, and I've talked about analytical engines. The layer above that is decentralized applications. The applications should be decentralized, which means if I'm in marketing and I want to do analysis of campaigns, I should have the ability to write my data product, which may be a dashboard. And then if you are in R&D, you own yours. So you decentralize at the application layer because that's where the business logic sits. And that's directly interfacing with the domain.
I agree with that. I think there's some very simple, practical things that we can do when designing new organizational frontiers for the data teams. And then putting, you know, various tools and technologies, making it less complicated, but streamlining it with what's important, what's the purpose of what these people are attempting to do. And I think that's one thing that people miss. You talked about it earlier. So on your travels then, and you know, you're traveling extensively. We talked about you going to LA to an investor conference. Let's shift over to LLMs and Gen AI and you know the flavor of the moment. There's been talk about small LLMs, you know, people being you know looking at very very narrow LLMs in that way. Where are some of the trends that you're seeing from these conferences? Where are investors looking at the moment? What are some of those new ideas or concepts that might be coming out?
Samir, I like to be in environments where I am super uncomfortable. I tell people that you should embrace discomfort.
Yes.
When I was an investor, so I was at this conference called the Montgomery Summit. I'm talking to these investors, they make me feel like this big, like I don't know anything. If I'm like super excited, for example, let's say between you and I say, you know what, there's a new knowledge graph that improves LLM and all. You know what the investors will ask me? How big is the TAM for knowledge graph?
Oh, okay.
I'm stumped. I'm like, I don't know. They're like, no, we want to know, is this a big market? It's a great question. I don't look at. They're like, have you looked at the 10K filings from this company? And have you seen how the company is showing amazing growth, but the growth actually happened in this sector, but not in this sector, which means they are effed. I'm like, I have no idea. I don't read 10Ks as a hobby. I can barely keep up with AI news. So this is amazing to be in these conversations because it shows you that we have to understand the impact of an LLM from the business and from the market. It's not a technology thing that says that this new LLM has a token size of 200K or a million. It's like, so what?
Yes.
And I spend a lot of my time talking about like retrieval augmented generation. And the business and the investors are asking, what is the actual application of it? Today, we are still struggling with LLMs. The idea was that in 2023, we would be learning, educating ourselves, doing a lot of prototypes and experimentation. By 2024, we would be putting them in production. But we're not putting them in production as yet. Not that many, I have to admit, although I'm a big a voice for Gen AI and LLM, but we are not really putting it because we still have not figured out how do I improve accuracy? How do I improve governance of these models? So I know that I'm not going to get sued because I exposed somebody's intellectual property or sensitive data. How do I do it in a very cost-effective manner? How do I do it with high performance? So in fact, just today I posted a blog on Medium that these are the four challenges which have to do with accuracy and context, security and governance, performance and scalability, and sustainable cost. We are still in experimentation stage. Now, a lot of people have actually gone production or somewhat. And in fact, there's a very famous case of a company called Klarna that is saving $40 million a year, a small company, because their entire customer support is now through a chatbot.
And yes,
it's an amazing thing. But then you also hear about this interesting case. A General Motors car dealership decided to get ahead of the competition, and they put in a chatbot on an LLM. So they're selling General Motors, GM cars. And one prospect came on chatbot and he said, which is the best truck I should buy? And the answer was Ford 150 pickup.
Brilliant.
You know, so this is, this ship was like, oh my God, stop it now. So so I'm just stating what is a state of affairs today. What I want to be emphatic about is do not stop. It's not money down the drain. This is This is your learning, your investment experience. Keep on at it. It's like in 1994 when World Wide Web was new. And if a large company, Macy's, say, oh, I'm not doing this. This is just like waste of my resources. You know, it would be a huge problem today, right? So it's a journey. Embrace it. Experiment. We'll make some mistakes, but 5 years from now, this will be table stakes. 5 years from now, my prediction is we won't even be talking about LLMs, foundation models, because Linux, it's like, do I talk about Linux and is it Debian or is it this Linux or Ubuntu? Who cares? It's Linux, you know? So the value is going to shift up to the applications, which are data products, by the way.
Yeah, so I just want to talk about there's kind of like the elephant in the room, right? Because we're talking about AI, we're talking about all these great things that people are doing, but the compute power, et cetera, the amount of the carbon footprint, everything that's going to be used in all of this is the elephant in the room that we're not really talking about. The sustainability of these models.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, it's going to bear big on the industry, on companies. People are maybe greenwashing at the moment with ESG, et cetera. But I don't think many people are talking about this. A few people are talking about this in the market, but not enough. Where do you think that needs to kind of take place? Where do you, you know, I don't think data products is the bang on trend, you know, that everybody thinks it should be. I think really these are the conversations that we should be having, which are more critical to the infrastructure conversation, to the modeling conversation, to the retraining of models, to the complexity that we might add into models as they grow, the amount of data that we need to hold. I mean, this is the things that people aren't talking about. What's your kind of understanding of this at conferences and, you know, just out there in the market?
Sustainability is a topic that's not talked about a lot. At least technologists are like, it's kind of hidden away. You don't see it. But as a very strong, staunch environmentalist, I feel very strongly. We shouldn't be building these massive data centers that are doing deforestation or stealing all the precious water resources to cool them down. I feel that that technology will get better. Even now, I'm seeing that there are new LLMs that will produce the same level of capabilities as GPT-4 at 40% the cost.
Okay.
I think there are new like quantization, and so there are ways and of approximating what should be done that will, you know, make it much more sustainable than it is today.
Okay, well, interesting. I think it's got to become one of the topics on the conference on the conference roundabout, should I say? So, where next, Sanjeev? Where are you off to? Tell us. Where's the next big conference, or you know, the what you're looking forward to?
I am super excited about my upcoming travels. By the way, I don't travel as much. I think I said that earlier.
Yes.
It's just so funny. We live in this social bubble of LinkedIn and Twitter or X. So it accentuates everything. But my January and February were pretty much at home. In March, depending on when you launch this, people would probably already be aware that Gartner's Data and Analytics Summit is coming up in Orlando, which is a very, very important event. So I'm speaking.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And what are you speaking about?
I'm speaking on the future of AI. What are the challenges?
Fantastic.
Yeah. I am very happy that I get an opportunity to indulge in these things and share my thoughts. After that, I'm going after 25 years to Paris. Way too long. The conference is not in the data space. As well known is KubeCon, which is the Kubernetes conference that I go to every year in Europe and then later in the year in the US. And then I'll go to, you know, all the big hyperscalers. Google Cloud Next is very quickly coming up in April. And then AWS reInvent is always the big one, but that happens at the very end of the year. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the travels that I'd be doing this year.
Now, what are you most looking forward to at the Gartner conference? Apart from your speech, obviously, apart from your talk.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm not. My talk is not the highlight. The highlight is meeting people. I love networking. I'm a insufferable optimist. And but, you know, this is how I connect the dots. This is otherwise, I would not know what's going on in the industry. So I like to talk to people and say, well, what problems are you solving? And where are you in your journey? What's stopping you? And so when you talk to the vendors, the actual end users, the analyst, then a picture emerges. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I get a lot of joy from is writing. I tell anybody who's watching this and is on the fences about writing, I'm like, please write. When you write, somebody very famous once said, I write to find what I'm thinking.
Fantastic. I love that. Do you know who said it?
Yes. Her name was Joan Didion.
Right. Joan, okay.
She was a famous author in New York. She wrote mm-hmm. that.
Very, very cool. So listen, for the listeners, where can they find you, Sanjeev?
The best way to contact me is on LinkedIn. Just find me on LinkedIn. My Medium blog is sanchmo.medium.com. So I've become a little bit more prolific in the last year or two. I also run my own podcast. My friends, people who've known me for a long time, they tell me I've done a horrible job of promoting myself because people don't even know I was. Yes, or a Medium blog.
Sure.
Hopefully I'll do a better job in 2024.
So. Good. Well, I must say it's been fantastic speaking to you. I wish you all the best for your travels, and I look forward to hearing how Gartner went and the reception to your talk, and hopefully we can catch up. And it's a shame we are just missing each other in Paris, because by a week, which is, well, you know, I wish I'd known. I would have swapped my visit, but look, it's been a pleasure. I wish you well, and all the best of luck.
Thank you so much. Would love to see you at Big Data London this year.
Well, let's see if I'm around. Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.